Okay, this is the second installment of the Shearing Sheds. I'm on a roll, so I just thought I'd do the next one pretty quick. I don't know if it's because I'm enjoying the stories and I want to go back to them and laugh, or I just want to get it over with so I can get away from the Shearing Sheds. But just as a warning, there are some crude... not that I've warned you of any other crude words, but there were some extra crude things in this one because I needed to maintain the realism, and if I watered it down, it just would not sound right. So apologies for anyone who finds this offensive. And personally, I do swear, and I can be crude here and there, but I've also got a prudish side, and I never swear in front of old ladies and children. We're rolling, Pommy. Glitchy sheep. Frustrated with a glitchy sheep, Steve screwed up one of his shovel-like hands and belted it in the head. His brute force knocked it down the chute that led from the raised shearing stand into the paddock. Poor thing lay motionless in the bottom of the chute. Steve was almost ready to send the next sheep down the chute into the paddock, but the other sheep was blocking the way. Hey, Pommy, come here, come here. See that sheep? Get that sheep. Get it out of the way. Get it on its feet. Get it up. Get it out. Get it out of the paddock. When I climbed into the chute and slid down, I saw the sheep laid there at the bottom. Poor thing. It was breathing heavily and steaming up. I gently coaxed it up onto its feet, and it stumbled out of the paddock. On your way, mate. On your way. Go on. Go on. I climbed back up into the chute, onto the stand, and in between sweeping and throwing wool. Because you'd have to... That was the hardest bit. You had to pick up the fleeces in a certain way and then go over to the classer table, which looked like one of those rectangular trampoline stands with mesh on it, and you'd throw this fleece, and it had to land like spreading a tablecloth. You had to land it perfectly, so it was like quick work, easier to class. And then Shorty would go around and just class what level of wool the fleece would be, put a ticket on it, and then that would go through. It's like a quality control thing before they put them in bales. So in between sweeping and throwing wool, I got back down the line where Steve was. Hey, Pom, did you get her up? Because he couldn't actually see. You could see slightly through the lats, like it was like a deck, and with slight gaps, and you could just sort of see down there, but he couldn't see. He basically stuck his head down the chute, seeing it was lying there earlier, but when he was back shearing, he couldn't see what was going on. And he said, hey, Pom, did you get her up? No, mate, I think you've killed it. Yeah, right, dickhead. Steve tried to look cool and nonplussed, but in between shearing sheep, I could see him staring down through the lats into the pen, seeing if he could see the injured sheep below. Finally, he couldn't take any more. He squeezed his big form down the chute to where the sheep had fallen. When he came back up, he was fuming. Pommy, come here! Come here! Oh, I just ran down the line, out of his reach. Pommy, when I get you! He held up his shears, the razor-sharp combs whirling and sparkling in the light. I'll ram this handpiece right up your horse.
Oh, man.
It was worth it, man. It was worth it. Tom's big job every year was for a cockier over in a place called Nudie Goat. That's the pseudonym, Nudie Goat, who had 5,000 sheep to shear. We spent the weekdays in an old timber farmhouse near the sheds. To these boys, the weekly stay at the farmhouse was like a camping trip away from the wife or from razzing in the shower at the bachelor pad. Sorry, I put that in. I was 28 when I wrote this. The beds in the best room, the only one that had a fire, were already taken when I arrived, marked by slabs of VB and TUIs stacked around their beds. Brad had a CD player. Sometimes he would play Tracy Chapman, but he liked country and western almost as much as Shane, Hank and Shorty. And if they got too pissed, they'd fall asleep and leave it playing over and over. Oh, it was like, some of the tunes was like, my wife left me, took my favorite horse. Oh my God, I miss my horse. Down, down, down. It's just like, it just seemed to pull you down in a depression, not like lift you out of a hole. Drove me fucking mad. But I didn't dare push him too much with that. Every night, the shearers would demolish a few feet of the beer wall and sit around a roaring fire of mallee roots, which are roots that they dig up from the dead land. So after the bulldozers had dragged the chains and fucked the land, they'd... there's all these roots left in the soil, and when the farmers ploughed the fields, they'd pop up and they'd use these timber roots on the fires. Probably because they'd done most of the trees. They'd be telling yarns passed on from the sheds. I liked the stories, but they were all just pretending to be tough, and it was old, you know, like they were tough, but they were scared of saying who they really were. So they were like, just... Oh, yeah, back here, yeah. They're telling this story. Like, they're telling a story, but it's all like, you know, they're not letting anything up. They're not making themselves vulnerable in any way. Anyway, this guy's going, remember that old bastard landlord of the pub up in Kalgoorlie? Shane said, yeah, he was a miserable can, that one. One time he wouldn't serve Jack Gray and Benny Lawson because one of them had pissed in his lobby last time they'd been in town. Dennis threatened to call the police, so they left. Next morning, Dennis went in the pub dunny to clean it out, and there's a big red sat on the dunny looking at him. Dickheads had gone out, got one, and somehow sneaked it into the pub. There's stories like that. Shane had the stage for a while. He went on to tell a story about a cocky pulling the head clean off one of his own sheep and saying to the shearer, who had been mistreating his sheep all day, if a sheep needs sorting, I'll do it, not you, all right? There was a lot of piss tough talk, and being a pisshead was something I'd run away from. It was bad enough being the pommy dung beetle during the day. So despite their big roaring fire, I would hang by the auger in the kitchen. Hey, Pom, come and play us a tune on your guitar. And I would sometimes, but I didn't try too hard. They were okay guys, one-to-one, but against the gang, it was a tough battle. I didn't drink enough piss to be one of them, and they weren't really interested in anything I had to say. If I was green to shearing, I was green to life. For all his tough talk, Steve never stayed over in the digs. He drove home every night to be with his wife and family. I knew he was a good bloke inside, which is why I liked him. The kind of like you have for an old, stinky, battle-scarred dog. Sorry, Steve. The shearing shed out at Newdigo had a raised stand, almost like a stage. This is good because you didn't have to bend down to pick up the wool. So although it was great for the back, it just gave the shearers even more reason to feel superior over the rouseabouts. As we fussed at their feet, when I went to clear the stand where Steve was, he stood above me and pushed out his penis through his trachydex. Hey, Pom, sniff my cork. I got a root this morning and it's still steaming. He looked around at the gang laughing. Asshole. Cool, what was his name? I laughed. And took off before he could grab me. Hope I can get you, Pommy. When he finished shoeing his sheep, he kicked it off the stand instead of down the chute, and it ran out into the paddock. Round it up, Pommy! Round it up! And his smile returned when he saw me diving around the paddock trying to catch this sheep. Shearers were nuts. They like talked to me like I'd come straight out from Cambridge University. And they were introducing me to some new law. But they had no idea how rough life could be in West Yorkshire. The shearers had tried to grind me down. In England, when people try to stir you up, you ignore them. Rise above it until they tire and leave you alone. But in Australia, if the guys pay out on you and you ignore it, it seems to get worse. The jibes got so bad, I could no longer just keep thinking of the money and let them treat me like a half-wit. After a hard day's work, the gang were all sat around on the wool bales drinking beer that the cocky had bought us. I found a gap in the bullshit, so I decided to tell the guys the amazing shipwreck survival true story. Did you boys see that story in the newspaper last week? I asked. What's that, Pom? Shane asked, trying not to appear too interested. Ah, the Pommy's got a story, Brad feigned a yawn. Well, it's in the paper. A married couple, they're out in the catamaran off the Queensland coast. They're like 130 miles out past the barrier reef. They were pretty inexperienced, though, and they ran aground on a shallow reef. And the boat was took in water through the hull and sank. So they were forced to take shelter on this like tiny barren atoll, just above the waterline. Yeah, right, boom, yeah. Now they were like 4 miles away from the shipping lanes, no food. By some miracle, they managed to survive. I'm not going to tell the rest of that story because it's totally out of context. Imagine these guys are scraping the barrel of disgustingness for weeks and trying to gross me out at every opportunity. So I picked this particular joke that was extremely crude, the crudest of crude, and I let it rip. And I'm not going to say what it is because it's totally out of context now and gross everyone out. I cringed at what a vile, disgusting, insensitive person I had to resort to be to shut these fuckers up. I absolutely grossed them all out. They were like, oh, bummer. Steve now thought I was a fucking joke-telling legend, but I wondered if I would ever be accepted back into civilization once I left this place. I dug around in Steve's bag of cassettes, but I couldn't find any music I liked. Apart from the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band that he'd sometimes let me play if he was in a good mood. In the morning, Steve played high-speed, crazy Looney Tunes music that made everybody work too fast. It was an insane work pace with Woody Woodpecker and Bugs Bunny going hysterical at the climax of the Looney Tunes songs. When everyone slowed down heavy with lunch in the afternoon, the music would change to country and western. Slim Dusty singing about a pub with no beer and some other depressing songs that lonely blokes sing when they're stuck out in the middle of nowhere. Kevin Bloody Wilson singing about a pommy bloke whose wife had a big fat bum that wide off her bloody tongue. It's like being caught in a time warp out there. But the food was awesome. Like, the work was hard, but every 2 hours you'd get like a decent feed. So you'd like bust it, decent feed, bust it, decent feed. But it was like 8 hours of solid running every day. Probably run a marathon after doing this. Would have been a healthy job for the shearers, but they just drank so much beer to recover from the stooping all day. The stooping was the worst. And they had like these spring like loaded harnesses that would take a bit of stoop out of it. But if you've ever done a job where you're permanently stooping, you get up, you feel like your back's going to break in half. Daft Dogs and Blowfly. Get him up, get him up. Get him on, lad, get him, you little. Steve leant up against the pens, fingering an itch on his anus and shouting at his dog. The vicious little mutt was on the sheep's back, ripping into the wool at the back of their necks and barking right up against their ears. Wool was flying everywhere. Finally, it got bored of the game, ran across a sea of wool and hopped the fence. I don't think the shearers had a decent sheepdog between them. They just seemed to bark too much and freak out the sheep. All that noise and Tim and me stood in the middle of it all trying to pack up the pens. Brad, Steve and Shane would usually be moaning at us. Hank might be out on the stand, making up a few rollies. Don't put that skanky fucker in my stand. It's covered in shit. Get them fucking sheep up, Pom, you poofter. Filling up the pens was pretty simple. Wide berth the sheep, swing open the gate, push one through and let the rest follow. But with the dogs and the shearer's interference, it was a real ball ache. Deep within the fleeces too, there were these like burrs that they picked up when they were out wandering through the bush. And they were sharp and they hurt like hell if you came across them. We also had to be on the lookout for cancer and blowfly. As I said before with blowflies, they don't lay eggs, they lay fully formed maggots. And they lay them around the sheep's backsides in the poo that sticks to the wool, which the shearers call dags. If you don't catch the maggots in time, they'll start eating the sheep from its backside. Fly! Was the worst word to hear. It meant I would be up to my wrists in woolly shit, putrid flesh and wriggling maggots, trying not to puke or breathe as I was told to take the stuff the fuck out of shit. Once outside and the mess dumped, I didn't really have the time to, but I'd stay out for a few extra seconds, appreciating this opportunity of freedom and only toying with the idea of doing a runner. It's a regime. It's a fucking... It's a bit like Ant having that job interview. You're like out in the middle of nowhere and you're stuck in this little box of insanity and everything else outside is just running as nature intended. One morning, Steve was late, leaving his home to drive to the sheds. Not wanting to miss out on breakfast, he scooped up in one of his shovel-like hands a load of leftover rabbit drumsticks that were on a plate on the dining table. As he drove, he ate, munched one leg clean to the bone, tossed it out the window, and felt around in the passenger seat for another, keeping his eye out for an early morning roo and any roadkill that he might have to dodge. Steve felt his way to another rabbit leg and he aimed it between his big furry jaws. Suddenly the flesh began moving in his mouth and along the back of his tongue. He began to retch and he spat into his hand, maggots wriggling. Whoa! Worth telling twice, that story. I scratched a big fat cross on the calendar. It was Monday morning. But not Monday morning blues, because this marked one less day before I could escape. We'd been to a shearers competition over the weekend, which was good up to a point. The real fast teams could have a fleece off in less than 2 minutes, and the female rouseabouts were much quicker and more skillful than Tim or myself. It was great to see women again outside this male-dominated shearing shed, and it made watching a bloke shear 50 sheep almost bearable. Shane and Hank decided to get up and show the other teams what it was all about. Tim as rouseabout and Shorty as classer. I thought Tom's team were fast, but compared to the other guns, we were in one of those dreams where you just couldn't seem to get any push to run. Shane's ass wobbled out the back of his kegs as he tackled it, a sheep. A waterfall of Victoria Bitter was streaming from his brow and smarting his eyes and running off the end of his nose. Hank worked away as easy as he did, in his easy pace, a roly hanging out the corner of his mouth. He would never be rich from shearing. He did too good a job and took pride in his work. He never swore or hit his sheep, and he never called me a pommy dung beetle C-U-N-T. Rodeo Greg and a clean shirt. The grey kangaroos that I saw every Monday morning in roughly the same spot were blatantly eating the farmer's crops. The cocky would have been up there with his gun, but I always forgot to mention it. The weeks here, out here at Newdy Goat were passing. The wool bales in the shed and the empty beer cans in the back of Tom's car were piling high. 3 of the 5,000 sheep were sprayed shocking yellow and skulking back out in the bush. I was getting much faster at roustabout, and in turn, the days were becoming easier. Partly through my speed, and mainly due to my ability to tell crude, disgusting jokes, I had been unofficially promoted from Pommy Dung Beetle C-U-N-T. That was the name of the past. Even Pommy Dung Beetle was rarely called out. Now I was just Pom or Pommy. No, I was never called by my real name, only by Tom. And well, even then, that was a false one. After work on the clear winter evenings when the brightest stars had only just begun to shine, I would be out in the fields scratching up roots for the auger and the old boiler that supplied hot water to the showers. Marg's the cook, waiting on me so she could heat up dinner. And tonight, as a treat for me, Marg's had made Yorkshire pudding. "What the fuck is this?" Shane and Brad moaned as they shoveled it down. It's nuts. I was giving them Martian food or something. They loved it, but they didn't let on. I only had one set of work clothes, and by midweek, they were starched solid with sheep stuff. Margs took pity on me and gave me an old shirt of her husband's. This gave me a chance to wash my one and only. In the morning, I unpegged my freshly washed shirt from the line. And this was the one I bought in Cowsand Road, the one with the dyes just running out of it, and they were still running out of it. Like, what was it? I don't know, 6 months later. I unpegged my freshly washed shirt from the line and walked down to the sheds. I felt good. It was a good day. The magpies were singing beautifully. This was September the 9th, 1996. I'd been away from home a whole year. The nightmares about failure had passed. Arriving home after only a few weeks away, but not wanting to be there, friends saying, "Oh, I knew you wouldn't last." Mum and Dad and, "Hey, maybe you can get your old job back." You make excuses, even in your dreams. "No, I'm only here for a cup of tea. Then I'm off again. The pilot is waiting." I wasn't in a rush to grab the broom, so I waited outside until I heard the motors of the shears start to whine and the pen gates swing. Steve was dragging out his first of the day when I walked in. "Morning, Steve." "You grizzly bear of a bloke." No, I didn't dare say that. The sheep he was about to shear released a soft green turd onto the stand. He looked in, picked it up and threw it down the front of my clean shirt. "Move the shit, Pom." "You bastard." I was giving them shit too. They deserved it. I had to. Tom, being a man to himself, didn't stay in the farmhouse. He slept in isolation in his caravan, where he'd stumbled back to after the drink had brought him to spilling custard down his cardigan and missing the bin with his leftovers. He always seemed to fall over on his gout-ridden foot and into the same prickly bush outside his caravan, cursing to himself. "What the fuck?" Yeah. It was a strange existence. Alcohol, Aussie rules and sheep. His face rarely showed a trace of happiness, but he must have secretly smiled when we capped off a farm and the mission was accomplished. Sometimes, like rain in the desert, he'd explode into a cross between a deep, long laugh and a cough, and he'd mumble happily to himself. Something like that. Once, when Tom was feeling like talking, he told me if he stopped working, he'd die. Give up like a sheep stuck on its back. I believed him. The drink, the fags. His body was conditioned, and he had a purpose. a reason to be opening your eyes and living out another day. You just need a purpose, right? Despite his hard exterior, Tom had given me a chance, overlooked my inexperience, and overlooked that my doppelganger may have not had a work visa. My doppelganger had given him a false name, and to Tom my name was whatever I wanted to call myself. I trusted him. I had to. He was holding most of my wages. I was surviving on piecemeal advances. It would settle me at the end, put me through the books in one hit, and I could escape back into travelling. I wandered out into the yard, walking slow to give my eyes time to adjust to the absolute darkness, feeling my way toward the Danny. I made a mental note of Tom's prickly bush and skirted wide of it. My hands found the hay bale cord. I pulled on the light and half a dozen frogs bounced around. They come in for the fresh water that was leaking from the cistern and down onto the stone flags. In this cool sanctuary of solitude, I opened my journal and began to write. The police came around today and took away Rodeo Greg. Rodeo Greg had arrived here only yesterday with his wife, after Tom had advertised for more help in the sheds. Originally from Brisbane, they were travelling around Australia. Steve, Shane and Brad traditionally gave them a hard time, shouting at Greg to speed up and even calling out head job if his wife dropped the broom. Fucking mental. Can't believe that shit. Early the next morning, the police drove down the track and took Greg away. Greg's wife had filed a complaint of assault. She said he hit her and threw her out of the caravan where she slipped and fell in the mud. This woman was hard as nails, and we'd noticed Greg cowered when she barked. The cops brought Rodeo Greg back in the evening, minus his wife, and stranded without a car to tow his caravan. Poor bloke was at a loss. Truth was, his wife didn't respect him for his complying, easygoing nature. She thought him lifeless and dull and was looking for a way out. So she whacked him with an umbrella. Maybe to get some emotion out of him. As he tried to restrain her, she went hysterical. And now she's took off and left him in the lurch. Obviously, I don't know both sides of that, and I'm not advocating violence against women. I've never laid a hand against a woman in my life. I've been punched by a woman a few times, but I would never do that. And I don't know if that was true. I was just living with Greg. I just saw what I saw, which he was an easygoing person, and I saw she was quite an aggressive person, but I can't say if the facts were true or not. Rodeo Greg spent the weekends at my Lake Juniper digs after this episode, and I got to know him pretty well. Greg walked with a limp. His body was broken from years of rodeo and bull steer riding. The poor sod was 5,000 k's away from home, wifeless, carless and skint. But he didn't dwell on it. It was as if he had expected it, and from where I was stood on the outside, he'd just squeezed himself out from under the weight of a big old rock. I'd tell him a few daft stories to cheer him up as we sat around, eating my usual budgeteer's food of tuna and veg, and he'd always say how good it was in appreciation. I knew it wasn't crash up, but we were both skint, both needing money to move on. The food covered all the food groups, and it was cheap, so I suppose in these times it was good. Rodeo Greg was put on the wool press. He was slow but strong, and it suited him. Tom told him he could stay at the Lake Juniper digs for as long as he wanted, even if he found work after the end of the shearing season. It's not really in a shearer's nature to offer emotional support to a friend during an upsetting time, but not long after Rodeo Greg's bust up with his wife, Steve thought he'd help to cheer him up. I know what you're thinking. And hey, Greg, come here. Do you know what a Father Nelson is? No, not really. Greg replied. Steve grabbed one of Greg's arms and bent it up his back. Well, he said, that's a half Nelson. He bent up the other arm. That's a full Nelson. And then he forced Greg over the pens and violently slammed his groin against Greg's backside. That is a father Nelson. Just out of this world. Out of this world. I remember shit like that when I was an apprentice. And, fuck, lucky I had a mate who was a boxer who looked after me. This Jamaican guy stopped me getting bullied. But fuck, unbelievable. Getting strong. I was one of the few men in the shed who wasn't derogatory towards Brad. And ironically, he was the only one who still gave me a hard time. If I went within 3 feet of his handpiece, he would growl at me. Can't wear my fucking shears, poor man. Rip your head off. Brad was new in the game of shearing, and it seemed he had the world against him. John was forever reminding him that he would have to up his numbers soon, or he would be out on his ass. And to top that, he had to submit to subtle racism every day. So Brad was in the mire and subcontracting the shit to a low level. Tim was giving me shit too, but he was a mosquito, an annoyance rather than a threat. Tim was all right, but with the other guys leading him on, he'd constantly call me Pom, 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 over and over. And taking shit from a 19-year-old was a different matter. But if I tried to shut him up, Brad would step in the picture. So back at Lake Juniper, I made myself up a gymnasium in the remains of the washhouse. I'd gotten a chair leg and wedged it up between the rafters so I could do pull-ups. A tin bucket full of lead and cast iron scraps was my dumbbell. I'd do dips in between two rickety chairs and then squeak around the countryside on the next door neighbour's push bike. I didn't want to fight Brad, but it's good to know I was fit and strong should he keep on threatening violence and wearing on my pride. Monday came round again, marked by Tom's grumpy face at my broken window. Shorty's green breath and a pie. Tim bounded down his drive. Where was Brad and Hank? John couldn't find them and was holding in a shitload of grumbles as we headed out to Nudigirt. As we passed the petrol station, I noticed Brad belly up between the pumps. Hank had managed to get to his feet, stubby still in hand. He ran towards Tom's car, waving his arms wildly. We drove to the shed in silence. Hank fell out of the car and beelined to the shed. The shearers, they have like that springback support which hangs down from the ceiling and takes some of the strain from their stoop, as I'd mentioned earlier. Hank had managed to hook himself a sheep and he was bouncing up and down in the harness in hysterics trying to shear it. They were still pissed. Steve told him if he didn't stop laughing, he'd knock his fucking head off. Brad tried to do some work, but he kept having to stop shearing to spew up and finally just lay down in the pen with a farm dog. Smithy had sent me a letter. He was heading down the centre of Australia with some Israeli guys. They'd got some old combi. It was nice to hear Smithy's stories and sort of feel that you were back or out in a wider world than where I was right now. I spun his letter across the cold linoleum floor. The auger which backed onto my room was almost out, and there were few clouds outside to hold in the heat of the day. I was in bed and holding tight the cords to my sleeping bag to drown out the music that droned out from the front room. Yeah, you're right. The old music was still playing. My woman, she left me and stole my beer. Oh, my God, I miss my beer. My old nag's name, Nettie, she died for me cause she'll never know leave me, and that's just because Nettie, oh, fucking hell. Shut that shit up. I didn't really want to get up and take a pee. I'd only just gotten warm. But the shearers drilling holes in the gravel outside my bedroom window stirred my bladder. Daylight sneaked over the back field and onto my window too soon. The magpies sang their mellow tune under a brilliant blue sky day. Margs was already busy in the kitchen. Out into the frosty yard. A splash of ice-cold water and I was wide awake and ready for my last day. Steve caught me out pretty early.
Yo, bummy!
When I turned to face him, he knelt on a sheep's breast that was full of milk, aimed the nipple and got me straight in the mouth. The milk was green and vile. I was still scraping my teeth over my tongue and spitting. When Shane called me over, his chute was blocked with a sheep and it's got its leg stuck in a gap between the planks. So down in the chute, like decking planks that ran parallel to how the chute, with the chute, not perpendicular. And this poor sheep was stuck and its leg was snagged, so the gravity was holding it and you had to sort of pull it back to try and free it. So his chute was blocked with a sheep that had got its leg stuck down a gap between the planks. I climbed inside the chute and tried to take the weight off its leg so I could free it. Tim was down below pushing as I was pulling. We were struggling to get the leg out. The wool was piling up on the stands with no one to clear it. Tim was panicking as the shearers gave a shit from above. Come on, you bastards, hurry up. The wool's piling up. Hurry up, fucking hell. I tried to get a better position, pushing with my feet to get further back up the chute. Then Steve came over. For a ridiculous moment, I thought the big fucking hairy bear was going to help me. But he just shouted down at us, telling us we're fucking idiots and we're costing them money. Before squirting oil down the chute, I slid down on top of the chute. Tim was sweating and cursing. Shane was telling me to get it together. Shorty, Hank, Brad, Steve were all pretending to be angry. I was helpless, crippled with laughter, tears spilling down my face. I couldn't move. Here she comes, Pom! Shane sent down the next sheep down on top of me. I was stuck fast between the two sheep. The sheep on top was breathing hot and foisty air into my ear. Tim was shouting. The shearer's still going crazy up top. I was slipping on the oil. Tears rolled off my aching cheeks. I couldn't move. Break time came quick. I was still watching my back, but no one seemed to have enough energy to get me. I asked Steve if he'd let me have a go at shearing before I left. I'll fucking shear you first, Pom, he said. But then he passed me his shears and patiently talked me through what I should do. The handpiece seemed to have a life of its own. Like, when you grabbed it, it had like, you know those those gyroscopes? How they have that gravitational pull? When you held the shears, that's what it felt like. You had this sort of, they were like knuckles, like pipes that had knuckles between them that made up like imagine like a bones on an arm or something. So you had all these knuckles that came down to the shears, and when you held it, it was like trying to get out of your hand all the time. It was hard. The handpiece seemed to have a life of its own. The shuffling combs, powered through a series of metal shafts, vibrated violently, fighting against the force. It was difficult to get an even cut on the wool. In the afternoon, things were winding down as we finished off the ewes and wethers, which I'm not sure what they are now. Lambs. All that remained were the rams. Get in there, Pom. Get the bastards. These Merino rams were massive. Merino rams are huge, 160 kgs, big horns. And sounds gross, but it's all about breeding. And a scrotum that looks more like a sporran, which is why these studs can impregnate 60 sheep at a time. Not at a time. In one sitting. What? How do you say it? Like a mating session? I don't know. 60 sheep. I opened the pen. The ram was looking straight at me. I hesitated, wondering where and how I was going to grab him. The blokes only offered abuse. Steve would eventually show me how it was done, but only after I'd suffered. Go on, Pommy. What are you waiting for? I tried to pull the ram's legs from under it, but its bulk held them too firm. I didn't want to hurt its legs. They were actually genteel animals. They're just massive. I straddled its huge back and tried to pull it up and over. Then the ram became extremely pissed off with me, pulling and pushing him around. He kicked his back legs frantically and railroaded me backwards against a pen wall, knocking the wind out of my lungs. Steve came into the pen. Look out, Pommy. He grabbed the ram by one of his horns and flipped him with one arm like a lamb. Okay, Pommy, quick, go over to my toolbox. You found it? Yeah, right. Open her up. Okay. Third drawer down on the left-hand side. Yeah? Grab my ball hoist, would you? Steve held up the ram's testicles. Its woolly pouch was the size of a small cat. I can't lift these buggers to shear underneath. Never got sick of these jokes, these guys. Since the guys hadn't been too rough on me, I invited them round to the shack for some beers after work. It was the first time we were all on the same level, literally. In fact, short of a few chairs, some were even lower than the Pommy dung beetle. My beers weren't going to last, and the food I'd made was lost after a few of Steve's handfuls. I started to teach Shorty Strawberry Fair on my guitar, but when the beers finished, he took off with a rest. Brad and myself went into Lake Juniper, and on this rare occasion, I got plastered. Without the influence of the gang, Brad dropped the facade. I had a lot of empathy for him, working out here, caught in a place where people found it hard to show their weaknesses. He asked me why I hadn't got on the piss with him more often. Life would have been easier. I told him to go and travel and he'd know why I was so keen to save and leave this place and go travelling again. Brad told me his dad had come over here from the Torres Straits, I think before Brad was born. He spoke about going back to visit one day, looking up his family and having a look around. I wish he would, but he probably wouldn't. He is a good dude. Escape. Before my leaving party, I had to go up to Tom's to sort out my money. 2.5 months of hard-earned cash, and Tom had it all. Elsie showed me into the front room where Tom was sat. This seemed strange. Like a kitchen dog, I'd never made it past the kitchen normally. Tom was his usual awkward self. He thanked me in his own way for working for him and offered me a beer. Then he scrawled out his signature on a check, ripped it off and handed it to me. We were caught in that millisecond of space between Tom leaving go of the check completely and me taking full control of it. But Tom kept the check in his grip. I could dub you in, he said. Fuck, what's this guy's game? I played along with him. Yeah, you could. Only kidding. Here, take it. I looked down at the check. It was $200 light. Sorry, Tom, but I worked it out a bit more than this. Bullshit. Gave you a chance. What about when you were learning the job? Fuck. You aren't even legal. I could feel a tremble in my voice. I bust my balls out here for you, Tom. I decided to leave it. I didn't want to aggravate him and lose a lot. Early next morning, I heard tires on gravel and Tom's voice through the hole in my window. My heart sank until I realised I didn't have to go back to them sheds no more. Tom waved me outside. Give me back the check. I did, and he handed me one to the right amount. Never talk to me about business when I'm pissed. We shook hands. He got back into his smoking chamber and drove out to do what he'd do till they planted him in the ground. The mission was almost over, but for one serious hitch. I was stood outside the bank staring down at my cheque for $3,000, and it was written out to my pseudonym. What could I do? Nothing. I had to go for it. I walked straight up to the cashier. So, Richard Morgan. Is that you? Yeah, I said, for waiting for her to ask for ID. Oh, yeah. Working for Tom, then. No worries. How do you want it? And she just counted out the dollar bills. And I was back on that same bus, heading west, back to Perth, and hopefully Bry. And I had cash in my pocket. And apparently I got it wrong about Sebco. It wasn't Sebco. My mate Dickie, he picked me up on it. He said, no one gives a fuck. But it was the Olympics in the 1920s or something. It wasn't about Sebco. So thanks again for listening. I'm actually doing this in the afternoon. I'm watching the sun setting down by the ocean, blue bottles floating up on the beach, seaweed, and Friday afternoon, got a weekend ahead. Hope you're having a good one, and don't forget, leave me a voice message. I know where you live.